The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
Message and data rates may apply. Reply stop to opt out. Consult a doctor prior to use.
You look amazing. What have you been doing?
You've heard of Ozempic, Wegovy, and other GLP-1 medications, right? Well, if you qualify, Zelday providers can prescribe semaglutide, the same active ingredient, at up to 90% less without insurance. Done all online.
No wait at the doctor's office or pharmacy?
No wait. Zelday can ship the same active ingredients as other expensive GLP-1s to your door.
Get started with Zelthy today for just $39. Call #250 and say keyword care. That's the same active ingredients in Wegovy or Ozempic, but for 80 to 90% less. That's #250 keyword care.
Hi, I'm Mike Dilk, and you're listening to the Relax Back UK show, the show that explores all kinds of health topics relevant to you, your family, and your friends. Each week, I talk to expert guests from a range of backgrounds to inform and entertain you. So please do join the Relax Back UK family and stay tuned.
Hi, and thank you for joining me on the Relax Back UK show. Now, with a bit of sunshine, a lot of us are thinking about getting out in the garden. And my first guest, TV and radio presenter Joe Wiley, loves her garden and finds it a real sanctuary.
If I am a bit stressed, if stuff is weighing on my mind, then it's a place I go to retreat and also to work off energy and just to enjoy myself.
I chat to her about gardening and also her love of music festivals. Then what children eat and don't eat and how to deal with fussy eaters.
I think you need to really work with your kids to encourage them to eat and try new foods and find innovative ways to do that.
Nutritionist Rob Hobson supplies some ways to help if you have a fussy eater to deal with. So please do stay tuned for a great show. Thank you. One of the first topics on my chat with Joe Wiley is something that we have in common.
And as the weather warms up, people are thinking about gardening and also about festivals. So first of all, Joe, thank you very much for taking the time to chat.
Oh, it's lovely to talk to you, Mike.
And hopefully we can gossip about those two things. but first of all, I must admit, I was doing a little bit of digging on the internet. Nothing too sinister, don't worry, Joe. But I think I found something that we have in common.
Go on.
As a child, your parents took you to Sidmouth Folk Festival, is that right?
That's right, yeah, they did, a few times.
So, likewise, my mum and dad took me to Sidmouth Folk Festival, and I'm certainly not going to say what your age is, but we are of similar ages. So I think we may well have danced together at Sidmouth.
Maybe clog dancing. Maybe we were there doing clog dancing at the same time.
Was that your thing then?
No, I watched the clog dancing. I can't dance to save my life. But do you know what? Sidmouth Folk Festival had a really big impact on my life, I think. I think it introduced me to the joy of live music. And, you know, I think it's where my love of festivals came from. And also voices and acoustic music. Because I remember sitting in pubs, you know, people drinking with a pint of beer or cider in hand. And then these people would just start singing with the purest of voices and everyone would join in and they'd harmonize. And it was just amazing. And that, to this day, that's what I like, the kind of music I really enjoy. And they were really fun, those festivals, right?
Yeah, I have real fond memories as a kid. But what I really remember is that they were very international. Back then, they had folk dance teams from all over the world. I remember teams from India, Japan, the French dancers on stilts. Did you ever see them?
I did. Yeah, we were definitely there at the same time. I think Turkish team, because they had really traditional costumes, which I was fascinated by. So, yeah, the international aspect was brilliant. It was really good. Fascinating.
It always, to me, even as a child, like a kind of a big, large sort of shared inclusive experience, because I, you know, I was a kid, but I really felt part of it. So what I'm wondering is, do you think that kind of started your love of festivals, because you're well known to love festivals?
I really genuinely think Sidmouth Folk Festival kick-started my love of festivals. It was absolutely where I got to just be in the audience. I was an only child. Well, not an only child. I've got my sister who's got learning disabilities, but she never came on those kind of holidays with us because she would have hated it. So it was just me and my mum and dad. But I really felt part of a big gang. And that's what I love about, you know, all the festivals that I go to now. So yeah, absolutely. It was instrumental in the music I love and just going to festivals and being with a bunch of people.
And when you went to Sidmouth, did you camp? And when you go to festivals now, what do you camp?
Well, no, because I think I put in enough time camping when I went to Sidmouth. I remember one night waking up at about 4 a.m. and our tent was being blown away, so we had to pack it all away and leave. It was raining so much. So it was, you know,
I think I was there that year. My tent blew away as well.
Yeah, I mean, but I loved the camping, like turning up and setting up the tent. It was really, really exciting being with other like-minded people. They're some of my favourite childhood memories. I occasionally camp now, but not in the way I did at Sidmouth.
I actually took my then fiance back to Sidmouth just before we got married, kind of with a big gap, and she still married me. So I was quite impressed by that.
I took my mum and dad there last year because I just wanted to revisit what it was like. It wasn't the same, but it was nice to go back there.
Okay. Well, so you've always done festivals, but have you always liked gardening?
Yeah, I have. Again, goes back to my childhood. My granddad was a big gardener, had a lovely greenhouse. And I remember going in with him to pick his tomatoes. He used to have loads of tomatoes, big, fat, you know, like beef eater tomatoes. And the smell and the warmth in his greenhouse, I really loved. So he started it for me. And then my mum does a lot of gardening. So it's always been there in my life, but not to the extent it is now.
Well, so now, What brings it on? Do you use it as a way of relaxing?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, gardening is my way of... No, do you know what? I it's really fun. I really, really love gardening. It makes me extremely happy. So if I am a bit stressed, if stuff is weighing on my mind, then it's a place I go to retreat and also to work off energy and just to enjoy myself. So yeah, it is, I guess, a way of de-stressing and relaxing and calming down. And that's why where the Miracle Grow thing comes in, because it makes so much sense for people to do the same thing. So if they've been working really hard in an office and maybe they haven't seen any daylight because they've been working in a hospital or a shop somewhere, to get home and to step outside into their garden or to go for a walk in the woods or the local park, I think is a really good way of de-stressing.
Have you come across this phrase, touching grass?
Touching grass is something I'm becoming familiar with now, yeah. I don't particularly think it's a fad because I think it makes perfect sense. Even my son at the weekend, who is like music producer, I've tried umpteen times over the years to get to do gardening. And this year I went, do you know what, I'll pay you to garden. So for the past few weeks, he's been helping me out in the garden. And my Mother's Day card today, I mean, my Mother's Day card over the weekend said, thanks for teaching me to garden. And it's really helped me. And walking away from not looking at screens all the time has been great. And I just thought, well, that's it. I've done it.
Yeah, well done. Well done. I wish I had as much success with my kids.
You have to pay them, definitely.
Yeah, well, I don't know. I might have missed the boat. They're 20 and 15.
No, mine's 24. No, it's not too late, Mike. You're okay.
You paid them at 24 to come and do gardening.
But like I said, he's trying to make a living in music, so there's not a lot of money going around.
Okay. All right. So I was going to ask, this idea of touching grass, do you think that works with plastic grass?
No. I think it has to be real, authentic, grown from soil grass. I'm not a fan of plastic grass at all.
Again, when I did a little bit of digging, and don't get worried, I haven't found out anything bad, but I found this lovely quote. There was a video of you saying, one of the most important things in my life, apart from my kids, and my husband, is gardening. So is it a family thing? You said your son gets involved, but does everyone get involved and help?
They're getting better. It's me, basically. It's all-consuming. It's the one thing I do if I'm not going to work or I'm not watching TV, I'm out in the garden all the time. So no, they're all very reluctant, but they're getting better because it's really physically hard. And I think they see me out in the garden like at 8 o'clock at night and carrying really big bags of compost or bark, mulch or whatever, and they feel sorry for me. So my husband,
a 24-year-old son, he should be getting involved.
Yeah, no, I mean, you know, genuinely, none of them share my love of gardening, but they are getting better. And they appreciate it because they sit outside at night or we play games in the garden and they look around and they're all going, oh, God, Mum, the garden's so lovely. So I think they feel so guilty. They're beginning to help me.
OK, so what do you grow? I mean, do you grow stuff to eat or flowers? What's your interest?
This year I've made peace with myself that I don't have to grow vegetables because every year we've got a vegetable patch and every year I'm like, oh God, okay, I must grow vegetables. And I don't cook very much. So I haven't really got that inspiration. And last year the slugs were so horrendous that they ate like literally everything I put in the vegetable patch. I just kept putting more runner beans, more peas, and they just ate it. And I just decided I'm just going to grow flowers because flowers make me really happy and I love growing plants. So that's my thing.
Okay, so flowers. The whole slug thing, I took on an allotment towards the end of last year and all the other allotmenteers had their head in hands with the snails.
It was awful. It was so bad. I'd get home at night and I'd go out, you know, do the thing of going out with a torch, and it was just this sea of either shells from the snails or just black oozing slugs everywhere, feasting on everything I'd planted in the morning.
So were you going out there at night to try and pick them off?
No, I wouldn't touch them. I wouldn't. No, I was just looking at them, hating them. That was it. Giving them Paddington Bear stares.
Well, this might not be such an appropriate question now because you're kind of concentrating on the flowers, but how do you deal with them? That's what every gardener wants to know.
Yeah, can someone other gardener tell me, because I have no idea. I tried lots of different things, you know, beer and all that, but it was just the weather conditions. You know, you can't argue with nature. You just have to recognize it. If you've been gardening for long enough, you realize that nature will always dictate what goes on. And last year we had so much rain, it was perfect for slugs and snails to thrive. And we put out these vegetables and we're just feeding them basically. And actually, maybe that's fine. I do grow potatoes and I do grow strawberries and raspberries, just things that slugs won't be tempted by.
Yeah, okay, that sounds good. What else? You've got dogs, I think. Do they dig up your garden?
Yeah, obviously. We've got a field just at the end of our garden, and my husband is helping me, is go out and fill up the holes that the dogs are digging at the moment. So the dogs love the garden, but one of them is a sprudel, so it's a Springer poodle, and he just loves to dig and put his nose in there and just, oh. Yeah, so they
do dig up your flowers, though.
They don't dig up the flowers, no. They're just looking for voles. We have a stream and we have a lot of voles, so that's all they're looking for.
Oh, okay. All right. That sounds like a perfectly good thing for dogs to do, really.
Yeah.
What about the Chelsea Gardener Show? Because I've got a suspicion that involves dogs. And are you going?
I'm going to go to as many flower festivals and garden festivals as I possibly can. I love going to open gardens as well. So, yeah, that's definitely on the agenda. Open gardens are amazing and they're really good for inspiring you and learning about new things to put in your garden.
I haven't been to any of those, actually. Oh, many of those.
They're good. Oh. The National Garden Scheme always let you know who opens their gardens. And it's lovely because like whole villages open their gardens and you just wander around and have tea and cakes and look at people's gardens. It's like...
It will probably suit me because I am quite nosy, essentially. Perfect. I do like poking around in other people's business.
You'd love it.
Yeah. What about your worst and best garden chore?
I love weeding, bizarrely. It's really cathartic. If you like really good exercise, if you're in a terrible, terrible mood, going out there and tackling a bit of ground elder feels fantastic. And when you can see there's no weeds left, I love that. I'm actually not very good at planting because I just get overwhelmed and never know where to put anything. So planting is probably the thing that I do worst, and weeding is something I do best.
I tend to plant things too close together and then regret it.
Yeah, 100%. Plant it on top of the thing that you planted the year before. That's why I do that quite often too.
What about best time of day in the garden?
First thing in the morning or last thing at night, but first thing in the morning, you can't beat it. before anybody else is awake, and you can just hear the insects and the birds all just coming to life. And there's just some delicious, lovely feeling to it as the sun starts to come up as well. I love that.
There's something special about maybe the first cup of coffee in the garden.
Yeah, and you can smell the grass. I mean, you know, we're talking about touching grass, but that is just such an unbeatable smell when it's all dewy and moist, and drinking that coffee and smelling the grass is delicious.
Now, you're quite a sort of a keep fit person. I know you do lots of exercise and you've done stuff for Comet Relief and all that stuff. Do you see gardening as a way to sort of keep fit?
Oh, God, gardening is all I'm doing at the moment to keep fit. I'm so exhausted by the physicality of the gardening that I'm doing that I haven't had the physical energy to go out and go running or to go to the gym for the past couple of weeks because it's peak gardening season. And it's so hard on your body. I mean, you're getting yourselves into positions when you're weeding or pulling something out of the ground that you would never hold in a gym normally, but somehow you have this superhuman strength when you're in the garden because you've got to do it. And then afterwards, oh my gosh, when you try and stand up and your back is aching and hurting and your legs and your glutes and your stomach, everything. So yeah, it's really, really good for exercise, but you have to be careful not to overdo it.
Yeah, of course. Have you got a lawn? Are you one of these gardeners that kind of loves the lawn?
I do love my lawn. Yeah, I really do. I like the way it looks. I like the way the borders frame it. And then the grass looks really beautiful. And also it's a space where you get to sit and you get to socialize and you get to, like, the dogs get to play on the garden and the kids get to play in the garden. So I do really, really love a nice lawn.
Okay. What I was getting at, what I was thinking about, is the exercise side of it, because cutting the lawn can be quite tiring. How do you do that? Do you cheat? Have you got like a sit-on lawnmower or maybe a hand non-electric push one?
Or even a robot.
You got a robot?
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Oh, that is fantastic. But does that feel like cheating?
No, it feels like the most sensible thing to do in the world because, as we've established already, my family don't particularly enjoy cutting grass. I'm too busy growing flowers and I haven't got time or energy to mow the lawn. So the robots have changed my life. I cannot tell you. They're amazing. They keep me sane. I just don't have the time to do it. And they are so efficient and they make it look really great.
But what about lines? You don't get lines, do you?
Yeah.
Do you?
Lines, you can get checkers, you can get whatever pattern you want. You can. Yeah, they you can actually program them to do different to do lines or checkered patterns.
Oh my goodness! So this is gardening gone modern, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It is. I mean, the technology improves every single year. We've had them for a couple of years now, and it just gets updated constantly. They're so impressive.
Oh my goodness, I've never heard of such a thing. All right, so next time you're in the garden, What's the next job you got to do when you're in there rolling your sleeves up, getting your hands dirty? What are you going to be doing?
I've got so much stuff to plant in the garden. I cannot tell you. If I look to my right now, there are about 20 pots of things that I bought recently, including a beautiful magnolia tree, a mini tree, but it's like an incredibly intense pink, very dark pink. And I've always wanted a magnolia in the garden. I took the plunge. So I've got to work out where that's going and then get everything else into the ground. So there's a lot of work to be done, a lot. But I'm looking forward to it. I'm really, really looking forward to doing it.
Planting a magnolia tree sounds like a really nice thing to do. They are wonderful.
Yeah.
Good. Look, Joe, thank you so much for taking the time to chat about the start of your festival love and also your garden.
Just encouraging other people because it gives me such joy. So to encourage people who, you know, as I've said before, that they're working indoors, they might not see the light just at the end of the day, to go outside, to touch grass, walk away from screens, you never know what joy and how it might change your life. So it's been lovely to talk to you.
Thank you very much indeed for taking the time. Cheers, Joe.
All right, what are you doing in your garden, Mike?
Actually, I've done a really stupid thing and I've said I'm going to make a greenhouse out of old stuff I find. Oh. Out of old doors and old windows I found in skips.
Blimey, that's impressive.
Yeah, I don't know why I said, and then I told everyone I was going to do it, so I've got to go through with it. And
why would you do that? I need a greenhouse. I haven't got one. It's one thing I haven't got. That's very impressive.
I'll send you a photo of mine. Ew. And I'll give you inspiration to raid nearby skips and make one out of old trash.
Yeah, definitely. Keep me updated.
Good. All right.
All right then. See you, Mike.
Have a good day. Thanks, Joe.
Bye-bye.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
We interrupt this program to bring you an important Wayfair message. Wayfair has got style tips for every home. This is Nicole Byer, helping you make those rooms flyer. Today's style tip, when it comes to making a statement, treat bold patterns like neutrals. Go wild! Like an untamed animal print area rug under a rustic farmhouse table from Wayfair.com. Ooh, fierce! This has been your Wayfair style tip to keep those interiors superior.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Before I got onto the subject of children's eating habits with nutritionist Rob Hobson, I asked him what's the difference between a dietitian and a nutritionist?
Right, so I would say dietitians are more clinical practice, so they're more involved in that. Nutritionists, registered nutritionists like myself, have got all the qualifications, but we tend to do more kind of public health stuff. We'd be working alongside industry, you know, lots of different roles. But I think the distinction is really just that a dietitian is more the clinical side of things, working in a clinical setting. Okay. But you mean, I mean, if you are looking for a nutritionist, then it's important that you get someone that is registered with the AFN, the Association for Nutrition, because they will have done the right type of degree and they will have had to, you know, put their portfolio together, which means they've had quite a few years experience.
Okay, right. So yeah. you said you're registered. So where are you registered and what are your qualifications? And the reason I asked that is because nutritionist is not a protected title. So I could call myself a nutritionist and charge people to give them my advice, which they'd be bonkers to take, but I could do it. That's why I asked those questions.
Yes, so I've been doing this for 20 years. My first degree was nutrition. Then I did a master's in public health nutrition, and then I did another master's in sports nutrition as well. So I've got 3 degrees in the topic and a lot of experience. And I, I'm registered with the Association for Nutrition, who really kind of champion trying to get that nutritionist title recognised, or just making sure that people that have the Association for Nutrition tag have the right qualifications, and they're not just saying they do it and they've done a 3-day course or whatever it is some people are doing.
Yeah, exactly. And I did look you up actually a little bit earlier, and you are there. You are on the AFN. Good. Right. All right. On with the topic in hand then.
Sure.
For that. Do we really have a load of fussy eating children on our hands? Is there actually a problem?
Yeah, I think we do have a lot of fussy eaters. I think it's part of growing up with kids. I think a lot of kids are fussy. They're sometimes very cautious about trying new foods. So I think it is a thing. I think some kids grow out of it. I think you need to really work with your kids to encourage them to eat and try new foods and find innovative ways to do that. You know, there's also research that shows the more variation you give your children when they're younger in terms of foods, the less picky they're likely to be later on in life when it comes to foods. Yeah.
Well, we'll definitely come on to that and maybe what some of that pickiness can cause in later life. But in the press release, there was one thing that caught my eye. It said that very often children are just given like ingredient. The food is made from only 10 or 15 ingredients each week, which seemed very low to me. But do you think that's kind of average?
Yeah, so this research was by HelloFresh, and they looked at, they found that the average family only cooks with the same 10 to 15 ingredients. So I think it's more that there's repetition. And I think there's loads of reasons why, you know, families, you know, parents, caregivers end up doing this. It could be because you know, they're struggling to get their kids to try anything new. It could be because they're just really fed up of trying to come up with new ideas. I think feeding your kids can become a bit of a hamster wheel, trying to think of new ideas all the time to feed them. And often there's, you know, there's also a lack of time, isn't there? If you've got working parents, it might just be easier to cook the same sort of foods all the time. I mean, when I grew up, we had the same food every night of the week. And I think that was quite common.
What do you mean? It's Tuesday, it must be beans on toast kind of thing.
It was that kind of thing, yeah. There was a roast, there was liver. I think Friday was always fish. There was cold meats and potatoes. And it was always quite ritual. But, you know, we didn't have a lot of money growing up. So I think for some people, that's the easiest way to feed their kids. But, you know, now we have a lot more variety of foods. Those kind of, a lot of those foods that we're talking about in this
research. We do.
Sorry
to interrupt. I just want to step back onto kind of what you touched on it a little bit, but what's causing the problem? You mentioned potentially parents just not cooking a wide range of stuff or preparing a wide range of food for all sorts of different reasons, but it's just easy to get stuck in a rut. I mean, I try and think about these things, but I certainly get stuck in a rut in preparing food. But what about other things? Do you think there's anything about kids getting addicted to junk food, or even, you know, UPF being ultra processed foods being easy and kind of addictive?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I've written two books on this now, and it's definitely a problem, especially when kids are brought up with these foods. You know, they start to develop a taste for these foods, and other foods tend to taste quite bland or boring or a little bit bitter. And, you know, as they grow into adolescence, then who are the biggest consumers of ultra processed foods? This starts to become a really big issue. And it's, you know, it's not just about the additives in the food, which is what everybody seems to be focused on. These foods are hyper palatable. They're marketed all over the place to people from vulnerable groups and people who are teenagers. You know, that balance of fat and sugar in these foods also triggers those reward centers in your brain and releases dopamine that makes you to want to eat more of them, which is where this addictive nature of these foods comes from. So, you know, it is really important that we introduce kids at a younger age to whole unprocessed foods as much as possible and don't rely on those ultra processed foods. But even within that ultra processed food category, you know, not all of those are bad. There's foods like whole grain bread and yogurts and hummus and foods that have ended up in that category that are still very healthy. So there's a big nuance around that topic, a really big nuance. And
it might be worth just saying quickly, if it's possible to say quickly, what a UPF is, what an ultra processed food is for people.
Yeah, so these are foods that are made up of quite a few ingredients normally, and a lot of ingredients you won't find in your domestic kitchen. You'll often find they've got ingredients you don't recognize as well. That could be emulsifiers, artificial sweeteners, preservative stabilizers, all these kind of ingredients. They also tend to be
no one's got a box of emulsifier in their kitchen cabinet, not even right at the back where all the things that I've forgotten about are.
Exactly. So they're quite easy to recognize, but their character traits, like you said, is they're addictive. They tend to be low in fiber. They tend to be low in other key nutrients, so, and high in energy. So it's quite easy to overeat these foods, eat too much energy.
They taste really nice.
And they taste really good, don't they? Like, you know, the classic Pringle situation. Once you pop, you can't stop. So, yeah.
All right. Now, I've got kids. They're a bit older now, 20 and 15. So I think I was kind of lucky in that they're not picky eaters. We did have just kind of one rule in that you've got to try it. You know, if you tried it and didn't like it, okay, we'll move on. But yeah, you know, if you are faced with this situation, what can you do about it? I mean, can you say, right, that's, you haven't eaten your dinner, guess what you're getting for breakfast? And dinner reappears. Is that a good plan? I suspect not. But what can we do about it?
I think we need to be a bit more engaging with that. I think that gives off quite negative. That can sort of give out negative messages around food. I think it's important that when you introduce new foods, that you do that kind of slowly. I think it's good to introduce new foods over and over again, and definitely think of other ways of serving them. Because, you know, a kid might not eat a cucumber, but they might eat a cucumber when the skin is taken off it and it's served with hummus, you know. And it's also trying to capture kids as well at a certain time, you know, when they're really hungry and they're coming from school or sports club. That's a really good way to start introducing new foods because they're actually quite hungry. It's a bit sneaky. But, you know, going back to this research with HelloFresh as well, trying to think about games around food is another really interesting way to do it. So they created this sort of colouring in sheet where you can colour in new foods that you taste and then tick off a box to say you've tried them. You know, could do blind taste testing as a family, you know, blindfold one of the kids, get them to taste foods and try and guess what they are, because they might not like the look of them. Or, you know, lots of build a plate, you know, you could do a little Taco Tuesday night where they start to engage with the food, or build a burger. You know, all those elements make food a bit more fun and enjoyable than just being told, if you don't eat this, you're not going to grow properly. Or if you don't eat this, I'm going to serve it again later. Or even worse, if you don't eat this, I'll give you something sweet as a treat, which is also just as bad in a way. So I think there's lots of ways to do it. It just takes a bit of effort, unfortunately.
Sure. I don't remember really making a big deal of new foods. Right? So I don't know, if you make a big deal and it's kind of a bit of a game, you know, you can sort of lose at the game. But if you stick a new food on the plate and just don't even mention it, you know, right, it's dinner time, we're all going to sit down and eat.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, that's definitely one approach. But I think it's if you've got children that are fussy with it, it's good to get them a bit more inquisitive, you know, mm-hmm. about these new foods. And I just think it's good to explore variety. You know, if you look at the fact that most people aren't eating five a day, you know, probably the average is 4.7. So we're really not even managing to get that target. If you look at new research around 30 plants a week, this stuff from the States, the Gut Project, that clearly shows that if you eat more plant-based foods, 30 a week, then you're more likely to have a more diverse microbiome. So there's definitely health benefits. And I think if you can encourage your kids to do it, and if it works for you, just putting it on the plate and they try it, that's great. But I think in some instances, it just might take a bit more encouragement, because they might just think, you know, what is that? It looks a bit strange and I don't want to eat it.
And what sort of foods aren't they eating? You know, what is the top... I'm just trying to think what my kids, if they don't like something, grossness. This is real grossness, my son has said. There's me saying, oh, I've had no problem. But, you know, we're a regular family. It's not that the kids love everything. And he'll sit down and say, what's this grossness?
Yeah. And it might be gross one week, but actually the next week they might try it. And I think also they're very influenced by their brothers and sisters around the table, and you know, and parents, if they see them eating it, and it's that can also help. I mean, I think the texture sometimes with kids is a thing. So I know I didn't like mushrooms as a kid, so I didn't like the texture. So it's encouraging those foods slowly. I mean, if you look at the foods from the survey, there's a lot of foods in there that kids might not have tried, like fennel or pak choy or tofu or purple carrots. But I think it's fun for them to sort of look at these foods and have a go. You know, if a kid hasn't seen a purple carrot before, that could be quite fun.
I was just thinking, I was looking at this list, and after saying, oh, my children are wonderful, I never had any trouble at all, there's a couple of things that I've never come across. I don't think I've seen a purple carrot.
Yeah, I know. You certain times of year can get them. So, I mean... Some of these foods are definitely seasonal, and I think, but a lot of them are often available, like beetroot. It's really easy to get beetroot in the supermarkets. Pomegranates, you know, pretty available. Asparagus, certain times a year. I mean, it does come down to cost as well, but if you're buying in season, sometimes these foods are much cheaper. So, yeah, it's just, and it's an exploration thing. The whole project with HelloFresh was really just to think about all these different foods that you could try before you were 10, just so you have an idea of what food's out there. I mean, I've worked in schools before now, when I worked in school meals and with younger children, and I was amazed about a lot of children not even realising what certain foods look like. You know, courgettes, you know, basic food that you might buy, and having no idea what they were, what they tasted like, or how you use them.
Yeah, well, actually, one of them on the list, that's the situation for me. I've got no idea what it is. Cavolo Nero, what's that?
Yeah, it's a type of cabbage. So you get it this time of year, and it's long, slim, and you kind of take it off. It's a bit like kale, the way you take it off the stem. Okay. It's a dark colour. Yeah, so it's readily available.
And I know cabbage, so That's a good start.
Yeah. Another thing in the press release, we were talking earlier about not many ingredients being used, 10 to 15 ingredients each week, and the need to try 60 before 10.
Not all at once, by the way. Over a long period of time.
Yeah. Where did that come from? Is that just a number plucked out of thin air?
Yeah, so it's a number that we originally had a bigger number, but this number felt more realistic. And when we looked at all the different foods that were available and the ones that were really obvious, we took those out and we ended up at 60. We actually looked at all the ingredients that were used in the HelloFresh boxes as a bit of a guidance, because they use quite a wide range of plant-based foods, and then kind of whittled it down from there. So, I mean, there's probably loads more foods, but this felt, you know, fairly realistic over the space of sort of 6 months or something.
Yeah. All right. So we touched on, or you touched on a little bit, but if you've got a fussy eater as a child, you're more likely to have a fussy eater as an adult. What's that going to cause? What sort of issues could that cause to, you know, grown-ups if you're a fussy eater? Does it really matter?
Yeah, I mean, I think it all boils down to this variety, isn't it? That you and yourself as an adult then start eating a very limited amount of foods. And it's important for, I mean, especially fruits and vegetables, they provide us with vitamins, minerals, plant-based compounds that act as antioxidants to support different areas of our health. So we're thinking about just all areas of our health. If you don't eat a lot of vegetables, you don't eat a lot of high-fibre food, for example, then you're, you know, we know that fiber in the diet helps to reduce the risk of colorectal cancer, heart disease, type 2 diabetes. So therefore, there's a knock-on effect for your increased risk of chronic disease in later life. You know, if you don't eat oily fish, that has a very heart-protective, cardio-protective effect on our health as well. So I think by limiting your diet to just a few foods, you're not getting the potential benefits later in life that these foods can offer you in terms of your health. So, and I think that the way to do that is to start young and to get them interested in as many foods as possible at that age. Because, you know, when kids are teenagers, well, that is a nightmare time to try for many teenagers, especially teenage girls, when they're experimenting with their diet. They're influenced by their peers who want to maybe explore new ways of eating. And we know from the National Diet and Nutrition Survey that this group of the population have low intakes of all sorts of vitamins and minerals, which comes from not eating a wide variety of food. Yeah. So
I was going to have a little dig, actually. I think they're mainly influenced by people like you.
Like me?
Well, maybe not like you, but they are influenced by what they see on social media and people that are nutritionists or call themselves nutritionists, for sure.
Yeah. And I think that's a really interesting point, because I think that there's also an education needed for teenagers in terms of where they're getting their nutrition information from. There's a whole movement right now for addressing misinformation on social media. And there was research that came out that showed that 98% of the information on TikTok about nutrition was completely accurate. And that's where a lot of these guys are going for their nutrition advice. I mean, I know that when I...
Sorry, I misheard you then. 98% is accurate or inaccurate?
Inaccurate, right. Yeah, so only 2% of it is accurate. And a lot of kids are using this like a Google search for different health things. And there is a lot of irresponsibility by some people that are touting these weird diets, you know, the carnivore diet, telling you that all of a sudden seed oils are toxic, that you can't eat oats. You know, it's all not founded in science. Somebody has an ulterior motive here, whether it's to get more followers because it's a very sensationalized post, or whether it's to back a brand or sell something. And I think kids do have to be very careful about that. But hopefully people like myself and registered dietitians are trying to give out evidence-based advice. And it is really simple. You know, it's getting back to basics. It's nothing fancy that you see with a lot of these guys doing on social.
That's what worries me. It's not glamorous. It's, you know, it's not clever. It's simple. But the stuff that is glamorous is often this 98%.
Yeah, and people like it. I mean, people love to think there's something, some conspiracy going on, and they, you know, they love to think that the new next wonder supplement or the new next wonder diet is going to be the next big thing, and it's going to help them to look like the person that's endorsing it. But you just have to use your common sense. And like I said, the best thing you can do is learn how to get back to basics. Eat five fruits and veg a day. Get your 30 grams of fiber. Eat lean protein, healthy fats, and a wide variety of foods. And a lot of people don't know how to do that anymore because they're so consumed in all the rubbish they're hearing on social media from different people that aren't qualified.
Yes, it is a problem and it does worry me. All right, so if people are concerned about what their children are eating, or they want to, you know, teach them good dietary habits which will hopefully last them a lifetime, and they want a nice resource, some good information, some good ideas, good suggestions, have you got a nice sensible resource that you can suggest?
Yes. So, I mean, I would always look for maybe the British Nutrition Foundation is good for some sensible advice. You know, the BDA, British Dietetic Association, has a lot of fact sheets that you can find out about different health conditions and how food can help with that. If you're interested in sport, I quite like the Australian Sports Dietitian website. It's got loads of really great advice for kids that are maybe into different types of sports, exercising. Of course, we've got the resources on HelloFresh that we produce, which is hellofresh.co.uk, foodbox/HelloRefresh. So, you know, and a lot of other people are producing really good resources. But, you know, if you can go to those professional bodies for your main body of decent fact sheets and stuff like that, that's where you should be going. Probably not social media, unless you know exactly who it is you should be listening to.
Yes. Okay, look, Rob, this is very useful. So thank you very much indeed for taking a few minutes to chat.
It's a pleasure. No worries at all. All right. Thank you.
Thank you very much to my guests on this week's show. And they were TV and radio presenter Jo Wiley talking about her love for her garden and also for festivals. And also Rob Hobson, nutritionist, talking about children's diets. And thank you to you for listening and have a healthy week until next week.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
The station that makes you feel good.
Thanks for listening to the Relax Back UK show. Join me, Mike Dilk, again next week for more fascinating interviews and chat. If you're listening to the podcast version, please subscribe, like, and share it with your family and friends. And have a healthy week. Until next week.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books, and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system, so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.